missed Christmas. Can you believe that? We missed Christmas. But we did. So we're going to be playing a Christmas special tonight. And then we're going to have a double feature of New Year's dramas, New Year's horror dramas. So we're going to start off with Twas the Night Before Christmas, which is a classic Christmas special. And then we're going to take a listen to New Year's Nightmare and Angel of Death. So those are coming up in just a moment here on CITR 101.9 FM. So sit back, relax, and enjoy your evening with us here from Skulls Hall.
Open Media International is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working towards informed, citizen-driven internet policy. Open Media believes in keeping the internet uncensored, open, innovative, secure, and providing universal access to fast and affordable networks. If you would like Open Media to keep campaigning for citizens and internet policy, you can donate to them at openmedia.org or openmedia.ca. You can also find them on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers present Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents a special program for this holiday season. The unusual dramatization of "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," starring Miss Greer Garson, who appears by arrangement with MGM, producers of the new color picture, Knights of the Round Table, in CinemaScope, starring Robert Taylor, Ava Gardner, and Mel Ferrer.
Good evening, this is Harlow Wilcox speaking for Autolite. Tonight, as a special Christmas presentation from the worldwide Autolite family, we bring you Miss Greer Garson in a story about a certain little girl on a certain Christmas Eve.
And now, Autolite presents transcribed, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas," hoping once again to keep you in suspense.
Kathy, Kathy, honey, come on, wake up. Wake up, Kathy. It's the day before Christmas. Oh, and there's so much...
Oh, Miss Bob, it's light out already. You said you were going to wake me really early today so we could go to the airport and meet them.
Come on, up you get. Let's get you dressed.
Buffy, they're going to be waiting for me and you didn't wake me. I know, Buff, they're home already.
Kathy...
Mommy! Daddy, where are you? Daddy! Mommy! Buffy, they're not in their bedroom. Where are they?
Kathy!
I know. I'll bet they're in the kitchen already having their coffee. Mom! Miss Buff, they're not home.
I know, honey.
The clock in the kitchen said 8:30.
Kathy, here, put this on, dear. You told me you wanted to wear this dress today. So that's why I ironed it for you.
Miss Buff.
Yes, dear?
Why aren't they here?
Oh, they'll be here.
But when I talked to Mommy on the telephone yesterday, she said she would be here at 6 this morning. And I promised her I'd meet her at the airport, her and Daddy.
I know.
And Daddy said he had a surprise he was bringing for me all the way from Paris. It's 8:30, Buffy. Let's go out to the airport now.
Oh, but there's so many things to do. First, you've got to get your breakfast, and we have to finish decorating the tree. And, there's so many things I want you to help me with.
Oh, everything can wait, Buffy. Hurry, I promised to meet them.
No, dear.
Why not, Buff?
Well, I think we'll wait for them here. Kathy?
Yes?
You remember what you promised your mommy and dad? That you'd do everything I asked you while they were away?
Yes.
Then, we wait for them here.
All right, Buffy. It's noon, Buffy.
I know.
Don't you think they might have called and told us they'd be late?
Oh, I'll go and make our lunch. You must be very hungry.
No, I'm not.
Oh, you didn't eat your breakfast, Kathy.
Miss Buff, I'm not hungry.
Look. Oh, look, it's snowing, honey. We'll have a nice warm lunch, and then we'll go out for a long walk. Hmm?
They should have called.
I tell you what, Kathy. We'll take our walk first. We'll see the shops. We'll visit. We'll go and see Johnny and your aunt and uncle. Maybe if it snows hard enough, we can all build a snowman. Wouldn't you like that?
Yes, that would be fun.
Well, go get your coat and hat and galoshes, dear.
All right. And when we come back, Mommy and Daddy will be home.
Well, you go and get your things now.
Oh, I'll get it. I'll get it, Buffy. Mommy. Oh, who's this, Daddy? You sound... Oh, from a newspaper. I see. It's a man, Buff. He says he wants to talk to an older person. Here.
Hello? Yes, this is the Harper residence. I'm the housekeeper. Well, just a moment, please. Kathy.
Who is it?
Someone wants to talk to me, honey. Will you go get your things?
No. Who are you talking to, Buffy?
Never mind, dear. Go and get your things.
No. No, I won't.
Hello? I see. Yes. Yes, I saw the papers. Yes, yes, that was the daughter. Yes, the only child. No, she doesn't. No. No, no, I wish you wouldn't. Please, don't, here. No.
Who was it?
Oh, it was just a man, honey.
It was from the newspapers. Why? What did he want?
Nothing.
He asked about me, didn't he? Why?
Honestly, honey, it was nothing.
It was about Mommy and Daddy.
Oh, wasn't anything important.
Well.
Yes, dear?
I don't know.
Look at that snow coming down, Kathy. Get your things, dear. Go on. Beautifully, Kathy.
Very lovely.
The street and all the decorations and the singers.
It's very lovely, Miss Buff.
Honey, here, give this to the man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Missy. Merry Christmas.
Let's go home now.
In a little while, don't you remember? We were going visiting, too.
Mommy and Daddy are probably home right now, waiting for me, wondering where I am.
And we'll build a snowman together, like I said. Come on, honey. I remember when I was a little girl how excited I'd get. Oh, all the wonderful things to see, the sights and the smells and the sounds. Pretty shop windows and the snow. To be a little girl at Christmas time. To be young at Christmas time. And happy at...
What's the matter, Buffy?
Oh, Kathy.
Buffy.
Let me hold you. Oh, Kathy, darling.
Buffy, you're crying.
I'm just silly, I guess. Why, look, there's Santa Claus watching us. Let's say hello to him.
You were crying.
Hello, Santa.
Merry Christmas. Oh, Merry Christmas, little girl.
Merry Christmas.
Well, you're a pretty little girl. What's your name?
Kathy.
Oh, that's a nice name for a nice little girl like you.
Thank you.
And I can tell you've been a good little girl. I saw the way your mommy was holding you.
She's Miss Buff. My mommy's away. Daddy, too. We're taking a walk to make them come home.
Oh, and where are they?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know.
Kathy. Kathy, come in, darling. And Miss Buff, how are you? Come in, come in. Mother, Mother, guess who's here?
Why, Kathy and Miss Buff.
Hello, Aunt
Liz. Hello, Mrs. Cleveland. Take your things off. We've got a big fire in the living room. And wait till you see our Christmas tree, Kathy.
I'm sure it's very beautiful.
I'll bet Kathy came to see her cousin Johnny, didn't she?
Yes, I did, Uncle Ted. I would like to see him very much.
Do you know what that boy of mine did, Miss Buff?
No.
He found the train.
Oh, he did?
After I took so much trouble to hide them out in the garage, he found them. So, of course, I had to set them up for him. Well, it's the day before Christmas. He's in his room now, Kathy.
Yes, I would like to play with the train.
Of course you would. Jolly!
I can't come now, Daddy. I'm busy.
Kathy's here.
Hey, come on up and play with my trains, Kathy. You ought to see. I got them all hitched up now.
Go on, Kathy.
All right.
I've been on the phone since 7 this morning, Miss Buff, and there just isn't any word at all about the plane.
Look!
A man from the newspaper called the house. I told him to stay away. Did the child know? I think she does.
What did you tell her?
Nothing. How do you tell a child, Miss Cleveland?
Look at it go!
What I can't understand is why no word at all. The plane took off from Paris on time, and there was radio contact over Ireland, from what I could find out. But since then, nothing.
You'd better tell her, John. Tell me what?
Well, there was a storm over the ocean. Pretty bad storm. They said...
Miss Buff.
Yes, darling?
I just figured out something. It's about Mommy and Daddy.
Oh, Kathy.
They're not coming home. They're not ever coming home.
Autolite is bringing you Miss Greer Garson with Ann Whitfield as Kathy in "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." Tonight's production in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
This is Harlow Wilcox again with a message from Mr. Royce G. Martin, President and Chairman of the Electric Autolite Company. It is presented in the name of the Autolite family, which includes some 30,000 Autolite men and women and their families, 18,000 people who have invested a portion of their savings in Autolite, as well as 98,000 dealers and the greatest names in the industry who use Autolite products as original equipment. This is the message from Mr. Martin. In our America, we are especially blessed this Christmas with a free country. We are surrounded with freedom-loving people who appreciate the word Christmas. We are grateful for what this day means to all of us and for what it meant to our great forefathers. We will never forget the one whose holy birthday we are about to celebrate. We thank him for the word freedom and the happiness that he has given us. We of the Autolite family wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a new year filled with health and happiness.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Miss Greer Garson in Elliot Lewis's production of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It's going to be good to get inside of the house, Kathy. Oh, look at you. You look almost like the snowman you and Johnny built. Here, let me brush you off a bit before we go inside.
There's a man there.
Won't you say, darling?
Right there, standing by the door. A man.
Hello.
Good evening, miss. Hello, little girl. Is this your house?
Yes, I live here.
Who are you? What do you want?
Oh, then you'd be the Harper's little girl, wouldn't you?
Yes.
I asked you, who are you?
Now, don't worry about it, ma'am. I just want to take a picture of the little girl. You want your picture taken, little girl?
Buffy.
You're the reporter I talked to this morning, aren't you?
And we'll want one of you, too, ma'am.
Here, get in the house, Kathy. Don't stand there, dear. Get in the house. I'll be in a moment. It's Christmas Eve, Mr. Reporter. Did you know that?
Oh, now, look, ma'am, I've
It's Christmas Eve. Where is your heart?
Now, look, you've got to understand. I talked to you on the phone. It was almost 10 hours ago, before noon. It's nighttime already. There still isn't any word about the plane. I represent a newspaper, ma'am. We've got to assume... Well, you know, I don't want to say it any more than you do.
Oh, just go away.
Oh, now, really, I've got to...
Were you ever lonely on Christmas Eve? Alone in a house that's empty? While outside other people were singing? When there was warmth and love and joy? But outside?
I'm just trying to
Christmas
do my...
Eve. The snow is falling. Christmas Eve. And the child is grieving.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Good night.
Kathy?
I'm in the living room, Buffy.
I just had a wonderful thought.
Yes?
Let's have a secret.
What, Buffy?
Let's not wait till tomorrow.
What do you mean?
We go to our tree and open some of our presents now. Maybe just one. We'll choose the one with the most beautiful wrapping. You can open it, and you can play with it now while I go and fix something for you to eat.
I'm not hungry, Buff. Honestly, I'm not.
Or just some milk and cookies, honey. You haven't eaten
all
some.
All right.
Well, let's choose. Go ahead, pick one.
All right. That one.
Mm-hmm. It's from Mr. and Mrs. Anderson next door. Open it.
You open it, Buffy.
Very well. Oh, look.
Very nice.
A carousel. Well, I wind it for you. And we'll put it down here. Now. Oh, my sweet. You watch it. When it runs down, you can wind it up again. I'm going into the kitchen. Kathy, here's your... Kathy, honey, where are you? Kathy, your milk and cookies are on the table. Kathy? Are you in your room, Kathy? Kathy, honey? Kathy?
Why, Miss Buff.
Mr. Anderson, is Kathy here?
Well, I know. Where is...
Would you mind asking Mrs. Anderson if Kathy's here? Maybe she came in through the back way.
Well, Mrs. Anderson and I have been sitting in the living room for the last hour. Why, what's the matter, Miss Buff?
Kathy ran out of the house.
Oh, poor child. I can imagine how she must feel.
I thought she might have come over here next door. She just ran out of the house. I don't know where she is.
Oh, a child like that must happen to her today. Wait, I'll get my coat, Miss Buff. I'll come with you.
Paul, listen.
Hi, Mr. Anderson. Want a ride? You go all the way down the hill for 3 blocks. They've got it roped off.
Paul, have you seen Kathy?
Sure.
Well, where is she?
I don't know.
Where is she, Paul? Where did she go?
How am I supposed to know where she went?
But you saw her, didn't you?
Sure. She was running down the block. I yelled at her to come on over, but she kept running.
Which way, Paul?
Down there, I guess. Where the stores are.
Thank you.
Sure. Merry Christmas, Mr. Anderson. Merry Christmas, Miss Buff. Hey, watch!
She hasn't been in my... my store, Miss Buff, and I'm the only one on the block who's open. Last-minute Christmas rush, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Ruxton.
Say, now, that kid and what happened to that plane today, I'd sure let the police know she was missing.
I think he's right, Miss Buff.
Call them, please. Call them.
Oh, use this phone, Mr. Anderson. Oh,
thank you. Hello, operator. Give me the police. Oh, hello, police. I want to report a little girl who's missing. Kathy Harper. Well, she's got blonde hair and blue eyes. Oh, wait a second. I'll find out. No, you just go in the house, Miss Buff. I'm sure they'll find her.
It's 10 o'clock. They've been looking for 3 hours.
Oh, they have ways. They'll find her.
We waited in that station house. All the policemen who phoned in. None of them.
Well, you just go in the house now. I'll send Mrs. Anderson over.
No, really. I'd rather you wouldn't.
Well?
Good night, Mr. Anderson, and thank you.
Patrolman Reed, ma'am.
Have you found Kathy?
Yes, ma'am.
Where is she?
You better come with me, ma'am. She is, ma'am, in the second pew.
Kathy. Oh, Kathy, child.
Christmas Eve. Church should have been the first place we should have looked for that kid.
There we are. All tucked in.
It's almost Christmas, isn't it?
Yes, darling.
You going to read to me?
Of course. You just lie there.
Buffy.
Yes, darling?
Nothing. Just read to me.
It was the night before Christmas. When all through the house, not a creature was stirring. Not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter.
way to the window, I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw open the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer with a little old driver. So lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen, to the tops of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all.
Buffy!
Kathy, baby.
Oh. Hey, it's Christmas. We don't cry on Christmas.
I thought...
Oh, baby.
Hey, how about a big hug for me?
Oh, Daddy.
Ah, that's my girl.
Where's Miss Buff? I was in bed. She was reading to me.
In bed's the place for you. Come on, I'll carry you.
Buff! It's Mommy!
I know, darling, I know.
Hello, Buffy. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Buff.
We had to make an emergency landing in Newfoundland. Small field communications were shot. That storm...
Yes. Let's not talk about it anymore now.
Buffy was reading me a wonderful thing about the night before Christmas.
Here. I'll put you in bed, Kathy. There. There you are. Read it to us, Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
To all of us.
Oh, well, I lost my place. Read it, Buffy. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers they flew with a sleigh full of toys. And St. Nicholas, too. And then in a twinkle, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little. I drew in my head and was turning around. Down the chimney, St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back and looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled. His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings. Then turned with a jerk and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney, he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down on a thistle. But I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
And you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver.
Let's listen in as one poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio.
Let's see here, God. Oh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Oh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Where I climb
climbed up the mountain, climbed back down again for you. I climbed up the mountain again for you, and then I climbed back down, climbed up.
Isn't there anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
Mutual presents The Mysterious Traveler.
This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back and get a good grip on your nerves, if you can. Where are we going? Well, let us say for the moment, we're taking a little trip into time, and a story I call New Year's Nightmare. The old year entered its last minute. The crowds at the Club Tropicana were waiting expectantly for the clock to strike midnight. At a ringside table, a lovely young woman angrily whispers to the man with her.
Chris, if you take another drink, I'll leave.
Oh, Judy, this is New Year's Eve. It'll be 1947 in another minute. Gotta celebrate, don't I? Just one more.
Just one more, just one more. That's what you always say. I wouldn't mind if it were just tonight, but you're always getting drunk.
Waiter, another bottle of champagne.
Nothing I say means anything to you, does it? You think because I've forgiven you a dozen times in the past, I'll do it again. But you're wrong, Chris.
Happy New Year, darling. 1947 is going to be our year.
No, Chris, it isn't. I won't marry a man who gets drunk in New York and wakes up the next day in another city.
Oh, Judy, what are you saying? You don't mean that. You know I love you.
Yes, Chris, you love me. But not enough to give up drinking. I'll miss you, Chris. Miss you terribly. But I know I'm doing the right thing.
Judy, don't talk like that. I couldn't live without you. You know that. Won't you?
I'm sorry, Chris. Here's your ring. Will you please take me home?
You don't have to leave. If the sight of my drinking is too much for you, I'll go someplace else and do it. Martin will take you home. Happy New Year, and goodbye.
Hey, do you mind finishing that drink, mister? 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm dead on my feet.
Sure. Sure, I'll drink up. No matter what she says.
That's right. Now you better go home and sleep it off. Good night and a happy 1947 to you.
Thanks. And the same to you. Cold. Gotta find another bar. New Year's. Gotta celebrate. Another bar across the street. Oh, gotta celebrate.
Hey, mister, look out for that car. You gonna get run down if you don't? Look out!
Feels so funny. What's that noise?
Those horns.
Why, darling, it's midnight. New Year's.
Oh, my head is throbbing so. Where am I? How did I get here?
Why, darling, you live here.
Live here? What are you talking about?
Charles, I'd better call Dr. Smith. You look so strange. Hello? Connect me with Dr. Smith's apartment, please.
Never seen this place before.
Hello, Doctor? This is Blanche Arnold. Yes, it's Charles. He isn't well. Could you come to our apartment at once? Oh, thank you. Goodbye.
What do you mean, I live here? Who are you? Where am I?
I'm your wife, Charles. This is our home, don't you remember?
You're my wife. You can't be. I'm not married. What am I doing here? What's your game?
Charles, can't you remember anything about us?
What are you talking about? I never saw you before. And why do you keep calling me Charles? My name is Chris. Chris Andrews.
Chris Andrews. So that's what the initial CA stood for.
Oh, that noise out there. What are they making such a racket for?
Because it's midnight, New Year's Eve.
Midnight? New Year's Eve? But it was midnight hours ago when I left the Club Tropicana. What are you talking about?
Oh, that must be Dr. Smith. I'll answer it.
Dr. Smith? I don't know any Dr. Smith.
Oh, come in, Doctor. I'm so glad you're here. I think it's the amnesia. It seems to have left him all of a sudden. Charles? It's Dr. Smith.
I don't know him, and I don't know you. And please stop calling me Charles. I told you my name is Chris Andrews.
Mm-hmm. Won't you sit down, Mr. Andrews? I'd like to talk with you for a few minutes.
What about?
Tell me, Mr. Andrews, what's the last thing you remember before finding yourself in this apartment?
Why, Judy. She and I were at the Club Tropicana, celebrating New Year's Eve.
I see.
I remember we quarreled about my drinking. I walked out on her and had a few drinks someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can recall. Oh, my head. I've had hangovers, but I've never felt like this before. What time is it?
It's just 4 minutes after 12.
But it can't be 4 minutes after 12 New Year's Eve. That was hours ago when I left the Tropicana.
Mr. Andrews, that was New Year's Eve, 1947.
What do you mean, that was New Year's Eve, 1947?
This is New Year's Eve, 1948.
1948? What are you talking about? It's 1947.
Well, here's the morning paper. You can see the date for yourself.
Thursday, January 1st, 1948. No, it can't be. It can't be. A year gone? Just like that? But where did it go? I haven't lived it yet.
Perhaps you'd better let me clear up a few things for you.
1948.
My name is Smith. I was a resident physician until recently at the Park Hospital. While I was on duty, last New Year's Day, 1947, you were brought into the hospital seriously injured, having been run over by a car. When you recovered consciousness 5 days later, you didn't know who you were. You were a victim of amnesia.
Amnesia?
Yes, and we didn't know who you were, as you had no identification papers.
But my wallet, letters...
They were gone. The only clue to your identity was a belt buckle with the initials C.A. on it.
We didn't know your real name, so I called you Charles, for the C.
Blanche was your nurse.
I've always liked the name Charles. And as for your last name, we thought Arnold was as good as any, so you became Charles Arnold.
But what have I been doing since the day I recovered consciousness?
Well, you weren't discharged from the hospital until May. Then you went to work as an insurance clerk.
As an insurance clerk? But I don't know anything about being a clerk. I'm a reporter.
Well, there was no way of learning what your occupation had been. So when Blanche learned of this opening in an insurance office, you applied for the position.
And that's where I've been working up to now?
Yes.
And then after you got your job, we were married.
Married?
Charles, I mean, Chris, don't you remember?
I'm afraid, Blanche, you really can't.
Married. But Judy. Oh, it's like a dream. My head keeps throbbing. I keep expecting to wake up. There's a date in the paper. January 1st, 1948.
Doctor, you said he might never get over his amnesia.
Well, that was a strong possibility, but apparently the sounds of New Year's brought back his memory.
A year gone just like that. Judy. My friends. Job. All gone. Doctor, where am I? I mean, what's the address of this apartment house?
You're at 5718 North 13th Street. Philadelphia.
Philadelphia? But how did I get to Philadelphia?
That we don't know. All that I can tell you is that your accident occurred just a few blocks from here.
Darling, I know what a shock it must...
Strange. You must have called me darling many times in the past. And yet this is the first time I've ever heard you call me that.
Yes. I know.
What did you say your name was?
Oh, hello, Doctor. Come in, won't you?
Thank you. How are you, Blanche?
All right, I suppose.
How's Chris getting along?
He's fine. It's just...
Why, Blanche, what's this? I've never seen you cry. Here.
No, it's just that everything's so changed. Those 6 months Chris and I were married before he regained his memory were the happiest of my life.
And now?
This past month since he got his memory back, it's been as though I were married to a stranger. It isn't as though he doesn't try to be nice to me. But it's all so obvious. He doesn't love me.
Now, Blanche, you mustn't say that.
It's true, I tell you. How can a man love a woman those first 6 months as he loved me and then fall out of love with her when he's regained his memory?
You must have patience, Blanche. It will take time for Chris to adjust himself to what's happened. He fell in love with you as Charles Arnold, and I'm sure he will as Chris Andrews. You just must give him time. Judy.
Oh.
Oh, Judy. Oh, just let me look at you. Oh, this can't be true. You're being here.
Well, it is. It's been a long time.
Yes. A year and a month since New Year's Eve, 1947.
Chris, what are you doing here in Philadelphia?
I live here.
Well, so do I. I got a job with Ryan and Company as a copywriter here a few months ago.
Look, Judy, we can't talk here on the sidewalk.
That's right. Well, look, I live only a few blocks from here. We can go to my apartment.
Oh, that's fine. There's so much I want to ask, and there's so much to tell.
Here, let me have your hat and coat.
Thank you.
Would you like something to drink?
No, I don't drink anymore.
Oh? Chris, you have changed. You look so much older.
Well, you don't. You're as lovely as that night I saw you last.
Thank you, Chris.
Judy, you'll have to let me explain what happened after I left you that night at the Tropicana. If you find it difficult to believe, I won't blame you. It still seems like a nightmare to me. That night, after I left you... And so now you know everything, from the moment I last saw you to this one.
Oh, no wonder you look different after having gone through an experience like that. Well, you're all right now. You know who you are. You're happily married. You have a job.
I'm not happily married, Judy.
Chris, you mustn't talk like that. Surely you must have loved your wife if you married her, and she hasn't changed.
Judy, there's never been anyone for me but you. You know that. And you still feel that way about me?
No, I don't.
When we met tonight, that old look was still in your eyes. You do care. You know you do.
Please, Chris, no matter how I feel about you, it's over now. You're married, and that's all there is to it. I wish you'd go, and I don't want to see you again.
been? I expected you home from work hours ago.
I met a friend.
Oh. Oh, you look so tired. Do you feel well?
Blanche, this past month I tried my best to be a good husband, haven't I?
Well, you have been, darling.
No, there's something missing and you know it. Oh, it isn't your fault, it's mine. And as a result, we're both unhappy.
You mustn't say that, Chris. I feel that in time, things will be as they were when we were first married. When you were Charles Arnold.
No, but they won't be, Blanche. It's no use, I tell you.
Chris, who is the friend you met tonight?
The girl I was once engaged to.
I see.
Blanche, you've got to give me a divorce.
No, Chris. I'll never do that.
But why? You know I don't love you. What's the sense in going on like this?
Chris, when you were Charles Arnold, you did love me, and we were happy together. I had your love once, and I mean to win it back. I won't give you a divorce.
Judy.
Chris. Chris, I asked you not to call on me again.
Judy, I've got to talk to you. May I come in?
Well, all right. But just for a few minutes.
Thank you. Judy, even if we hadn't met again a week ago, things wouldn't have been any different between my wife and myself. I'll never love her. And I'm not going on with her.
What do you mean, Chris?
I'm going to leave her, Judy, and start all over, someplace far away. I just came around to say goodbye.
Are you set on leaving her?
Yes. Nothing can change my mind about that.
Now, you've got to understand my position, Chris. I could never be happy with you if I thought I'd been the one who came between you and your wife. But if you are going to leave her, I would like to see you again when you're free.
Would you, Judy?
Yes. But I don't want to see you until she's given you a divorce.
A divorce? Judy, I am going to be free. Nothing's going to prevent it. Nothing. Blanche, how would you like to go out tonight?
Go out?
Yeah, we might take in a show or go dancing. Didn't I ever take you out when I was Charles Arnold?
Why, yes. We used to have wonderful evenings together then.
Well, why not now? Unless you don't want to.
Oh, Chris, there's nothing in the world I'd rather do.
Hey, why the tears?
Oh, it's just that I'm so happy.
Oh, come here. Did this Mr. Arnold ever put his arms around you like this?
Oh, yes, often. Oh, Chris, stop squeezing me so tight. Chris!
Sorry, darling.
Oh, you almost squeezed me to death.
That's so you remember that I'm your husband and not Mr. Arnold. And Blanche.
Oh, yes, Chris.
I'm taking a week's vacation soon, What do you say if we go up to the Adirondack Mountains for a week of winter sports?
Oh, Chris, I'd love to. Well, it'll be like a second honeymoon.
Blanche, you all right? It's only a few more feet to the top.
I'm coming, darling. Oh, Chris. Oh, the view is wonderful from here, isn't it?
You're right. Being up here is like being alone in the world.
Yes, just the two of us. Oh, this past week's been a wonderful one, Chris. I've never been so happy.
Nor have I.
Oh, be careful, Chris. Don't go so near the edge. That canyon's 4,000 feet deep.
Oh, this ledge is perfectly safe. Come over here and take a look at the valley below.
All right. Oh, please keep your arms around me, Chris. Looking down like this frightens me.
There. You're safe in my arms.
Chris, why are you looking at me that way?
What way, dear?
I don't know. Is your head throbbing again?
No, dear. I don't suppose you've changed your mind about giving me a divorce, have you?
Giving you a divorce? But I thought we were so happy together.
Yes, that's the impression I meant people to get.
Chris, you can't be serious. Why, everything's been wonderful these past few weeks.
Oh, I see it won't be any use trying to talk you into it.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry, Blanche. I don't want to do this, but you've given me no alternative. It's really your own fault, that you must die.
Let go of me.
No, struggling, darling. No one can see or hear you, and you can't possibly escape.
You can't throw me off that ledge, Justin, and I'll hang you.
I don't think so, dear. We've been so happy these past few weeks, I'm sure the police will see it as an unfortunate accident.
Stop pushing me toward the edge, Chris. Don't know. I'll give you a divorce. I'll give you anything.
I'm afraid it's too late for that. Good evening, Judy. May I come in?
Why, yes, of course. How are you, Chris?
Oh, I'm all right. I want to thank you for the note you sent me when Blanche died.
I can't tell you how sorry I was to hear about it, Chris.
Yes, it all happened so quickly.
Mm. What have you been doing since then?
Oh, just working. Trying to straighten myself out.
Yes.
Judy, perhaps I shouldn't talk about it now, seeing that Blanche has only been gone a month, but I've been thinking of leaving town. Would you come with me?
Please sit down, Chris. You make me nervous walking back and forth like this.
All right. You haven't answered my question.
Well, it isn't easy to answer.
It would be if you said yes. I see in your eyes you mean no. Why?
Chris, I've met someone else recently.
Someone else? But you said if I were free, you'd marry me.
I didn't say I'd marry you. I said if you were free, I'd like to see you again. But now I'm not even sure of that. You're so different from what you used to be.
Stop being clever. If you didn't say you'd marry me, you implied as much.
Please, Chris, you're making it so difficult for me.
I'm making it difficult for you. And I suppose what I've been through doesn't count. I risked my life to get you.
Risked your life? Chris, what are you saying?
Are you such a fool as to believe that Blanche fell off that mountain?
Chris, you didn't.
Yes. And I didn't because you said you'd marry me if I were free.
Oh, no, I meant a divorce.
But she wouldn't give me a divorce. It was the only way I could gain my freedom. And now you tell me there's someone else.
Oh, Chris.
I did it for you. And you're going to marry me.
No, I won't.
If I can't have you, no one else will.
Chris, what's the matter with you? Chris!
We were meant for each other, darling. In life and in death.
Chris, if you come any closer, I'll scream for help. No, don't! Chris, no!
You won't marry me. You'll never marry anyone else. There. He'll never have you.
Hold on over there!
I didn't want to do it, darling. But you forced me to. Oh, my head. It throbs so. Everything's like a nightmare.
Open up in there. This is the police.
The police? I've got to get away. Oh, they're closing in on me. There's no escape from this room.
Let's work our way down from this end of the room to the other.
They'll never take me alive. Never. I've got 5 bullets. 4 for them and the last for myself.
Easy now, Joe. You maybe had me head one of those chimneys.
Oh, my head. It keeps throbbing so. If I could only think. All this can't be real. It's like a horrible dream. It is coming for me.
Wait. There's someone behind that chimney over there. Get under cover.
They'll never take me alive, never. I'll show them.
Mike.
Why don't you come and get me? The friends shoot it out with me, huh? I'll show you!
Empty. You'll never take me alive. Never!
He's climbing up on the ledge. It's 15 stories.
I'm coming, Judy. I'm coming.
He's going to jump.
I'm falling. Falling! You'll never take me. Never. I'm falling. Falling.
Doctor, the patient's recovering consciousness.
Yes, you're right. He's opening his eyes.
Oh, my head. It drops so. Where am I? Oh, it was a dream. Not real. Oh, thank heaven.
Now, you must be quiet. You've been in a serious accident.
Accident?
Yes. You were hit by an automobile New Year's morning. Would you mind telling me your name? There weren't any identification papers in your clothing, and we'd like to inform your relatives of what's happened.
My name? I can't remember my name.
I see. Well, what about your address? Can you remember that?
No. No, I can't remember anything.
Now, you mustn't get excited. It'll all come back to you. You received a fractured skull from the accident.
There was a mountain.
Mountain? You mean you live near one?
I don't know. There was a mountain, and the police were chasing me, and I jumped off a high building. It's all mixed up.
You probably dreamed that while you were unconscious, but you're all right now. Just need rest and quiet.
Where am I?
You're in the Park Hospital, Philadelphia.
Philadelphia? What day is it?
It's January 5th, 1947. It's 7:26 in the evening.
And you don't know my name?
No, all we have is your belt buckle with the initials C.A.
C.A.
Nurse, will you look after the patient now? I'll be in to see him later tonight.
Yes, doctor. Are you comfortable?
The initials C.A. What do you suppose they stand for?
Perhaps the C is for Charles?
Charles? Charles. I don't know.
Well, suppose I call you Charles, just for the time being. I always liked the name Charles.
All right. What's your name?
I'm Miss Thompson, but you can call me Blanche. And Charles, let me be the first to wish you a happy 1947.
Traveler again. Have you enjoyed our little trip? Oh, by the way, I want to wish you all a very happy new year. And I do hope you'll be careful about making new acquaintances. And perhaps you'd better keep an eye on the old ones, too. For after all, who can foretell the future? Not even Chris Andrews, or should I say Charles Arnold, knows what's in store for him. But we do, don't we? And speaking of the future, Oh, you're getting off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time.
Now, Roma wine. R-O-M-A. Made in California for enjoyment throughout the world. Roma Wines present... Paul Henry, the star of The Angel of Death, a suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Roma Wines by William Spear. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, is presented for your enjoyment by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma Wines. Those excellent California wines that can add so much pleasantness to the way you live. To your happiness in entertaining guests. To your enjoyment of everyday meals. Yes, right now a glass full would be very pleasant as Roma Wines bring you Mr. Paul Henreid in a remarkable tale of suspense.
December 31st, New Year's Eve. I shall identify myself as John Forsythe, my true name, as I have no reason to fear its being known, nor to assume one of a different character. My early life has no place in this narrative, save only to point out with the utmost objectivity that I have always been possessed since my tenderest youth of extraordinary intellectual powers. As witness, my acquisition at the age of 16 of degrees from not one, but three of the leading universities of Europe, where, despite my British nativity, I spent my formative years. But this fact has no special significance other than as it applies to those events which were set in motion on another New Year's Eve in London 15 years ago. For it was on that evening, as I had planned some weeks before it should be, that I stood outside a door and listened for confirmation of the relationship I knew existed between my best friend and my wife.
Darling.
It's all right now, Pam. It's all right. It's all over now.
Yes.
Are you happy?
Yes, now that we've decided. Yes. Almost for the first time since I can remember.
I know, darling. I suppose we should feel sorry for him, but I can't. Not after the way he's treated you.
Raymond, what do you suppose he'll do?
It doesn't matter, darling. Tomorrow we'll be on the Atlantic Ocean, and within a month we'll be on my uncle's plantation in Brazil, where he couldn't find us if he'd looked for 100 years.
No, I suppose it doesn't even matter.
How long will it take you to pack?
Oh, an hour.
Well, I ought to be back by then. I just got to pick up the tickets and a few things.
All right. Hurry, darling.
I will, darling. I will. Goodbye.
Goodbye, darling.
Good evening, my dear. Why, what's the matter, Pamela? You look as though you'd seen a ghost.
Oh, why, nothing. You startled me, that's all. You said you were going out of town for the holidays. And you don't usually come in by the back door.
You needn't be alarmed. I shall only be a moment. I forgot something.
Can I get it for you?
Your anxiety for my every wish is touching. But no, thank you. By the way, Pamela, have you any last words?
Any what?
We may not see each other for a while, you know.
John, what are you talking about? What's the matter with you?
Oh, my dear, sometimes I wonder if I married you out of infatuation for your beauty or pity for your stupidity.
Oh, John, please.
Pamela, where do you suppose we shall all be, say, within the month?
Does it really matter so much?
No, I suppose it does not. Within the month, I was on trial for their murder.
You are Henry Jenkins, proprietor of the Crown and Lion, number 17 Buxton Street.
I'm that one, sir. I am. Henry Jenkins, sole owner
of
Proprietor River.
Now, will you kindly repeat the words spoken by the prisoner in the dock while in your place of business several weeks ago?
Yes, sir. Excuse me, sir. About 2 weeks ago one night, Mr. Forsythe there, who's a steady customer of mine, although not what you'd call a sociable man.
Yes.
Well, sir, all me other customers had gone home. And I was asking Mr. Forsythe to leave also, just so I could close up me shutters, you know. When all of a sudden he looks up at me and he whispers, kind of hoarse-like, Jenkins, I did it. I finally did it. Not knowing what he did, sir, I naturally ask him what he did.
And what did the prisoner tell you, Mr. Jenkins?
He said, sir, warning me to keep it quiet, sir. I found them together, and I killed him. And then he laughs in a crazy way and added, and Jenkins, I've hid the bodies where no one will ever find them. Well, that's what he said, sir, so help me if it...
I saw him burning what looked to be a lot of bloody clothes. In the furnace it was, and he didn't try to hide them either. Just stared at me kind of odd-like, and went right on as brazen as you please he did.
He wasn't worried at all. He said the two of them won't ever get away together, except if they are dead.
on the stair landing one night and several other times in their rooms. Pamela, he says, if you don't stop leering at Raymond Tillotson with those evil eyes of yours, I'll see the two of you in your grave. I warn you.
The court feels that it is its duty at this time again to remind the prisoner that he has so far made, nor allowed to be made by counsel in his defense, no cross-examination of witnesses, nor rebuttal to the charges made by the prosecution of any kind, and that this attitude can only result adversely to his cause. The prisoner is therefore once more given the opportunity at this time to make such rebuttal. Now, does the prisoner wish to do so?
No, Your Lordship, I do not.
Does the prisoner wish to make any statement of any nature whatsoever in his defense?
I should merely like to ask the prosecution one question, Your Lordship.
Yes? What is it?
Has the prosecution found the bodies?
Well, the prisoner wishes to know if the prosecution has yet produced the bodies of the alleged victims of the crime for which he is on trial.
Well, no, Your Lordship. We have not.
That is all. Thank you. To kill them had been my plan and my intention, naturally. But not in the usual stupid way such things are done, where men gamble their own lives against the lives of those whom they destroy. Every faculty of my intelligence revolted against such a thought. And so, for me, the gambler's risk was needless. So I planned it. It was therefore without fear or question that I stood before the court to hear the verdict which, in all the writing of it, I had contrived against myself.
Order!
John Forsyth, the court has given most careful consideration to the fact that the bodies of the named victims have not been presented to this court as due evidence and a surety of murder, a fact which admittedly must alter the circumstances of guilt. But this Crown Court, no matter how deeply it desires to aid you, cannot but recognize the fact that you have allowed every shred of evidence and element to point to you as a cold-blooded killer. Under such circumstances, questionable though they may be, I can do only as the King's law directs me to do, tempered with the mercy of His Majesty's court. I hereby sentence you to no more than 20 and no less than 10 years at hard labor for the suspected and willful murders of your wife, one Pamela Felice Forsyth, and one Raymond Elton Tillotson. And may God protect the Crown and the jurisprudence of this court of His Royal Majesty.
To 20 years. It was perhaps a bit more than I expected, but I was content. And it may be that there was even the trace of a smile upon my lips as I left the courtroom. Certainly, it was justified, if only by the looks of awe and admiration turned in my direction by the spectators. Clearly, they recognized my genius, and I knew they were thinking of the countless lesser men who had failed in their efforts to hide even one dead body. Whereas I, apparently without effort, had successfully hidden two.
For Suspense, Roma Wines are bringing you as star Paul Henreid in The Angel of Death by Alan Cameron. Roma Wines present tonight, Nation Tonight, in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Between the acts of Suspense, this is Truman Bradley for Roma Wines. With the holiday excitement over, most of us are glad to enjoy evenings at home again, taking it easy and economizing. What a perfect time to serve Roma California Sherry. Yes, glorious golden amber, Roma sherry adds so much to happy hours at home, yet costs so very little. More Americans every day make Roma sherry first call for dinner. You'll find Roma sherry ideal for entertaining, too. Delicious anytime. For Roma sherry is a happy, mellow wine with tempting fragrance, satisfying natural sweetness, and superb nut-like taste. Roma sherry, like all Roma wine, is a true wine, unvaryingly good always. Crushed from choicest grapes, grown in California's finest vineyards, then unhurriedly guided to tempting perfection by Roma's ancient winemaking skill. Bottled at the winery. Get Roma sherry tomorrow, now selling at lowest prices in years. Insist on Roma, R-O-M-A, Roma wine, for uniformly fine quality at low cost. Remember, more Americans enjoy Roma than any other wine.
And now Roma Wines bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Paul Henry as John Forsythe in The Angel of Death, a play well calculated to keep you in suspense.
It was thus that I began my prison term. My association with William Waters, the sallow-faced, ill-favored little man who was to be my chief source of amusement and mental exercise for a long time to come, and to illustrate still further the inevitable triumph of the high intellect over all obstacles and surroundings.
So you're the great John Forsythe, eh?
You've heard of me, then?
Not half, I haven't. The luckiest beggar that ever cheated the hangman.
Luck? There is no such thing as luck.
No? And how is it you're sitting here safe and sound, and out as free as air in 15 or 20 years, instead of stretching your neck at the end of a rope, eh?
I'm here because I choose to be here. That is all.
Because you choose to be, eh? Now, tell me, Forsythe, just between us two, how did you do it?
By using my brains.
And there's many another tried that before and been caught up with.
Simply because they did not really have any brains to start with.
No, it's luck, I tell you. Bad luck, like mine. You want to hear the worst bit of luck ever ruined a man's life?
Well, if you wish to call it that, why not?
It was like what happened to you in a way. A sweetheart, Agnes, her name was. The biggest, bluest eyes. The prettiest little thing you'd ever hope to see.
And you'd killed her.
I didn't mean to. It was the usual, you know, and I caught her dead to rights. But she laughed at me. That was the trouble. Threw it in my face, she did. Next thing I knew, something snapped. And when me head cleared, there I was sitting on the floor beside her, crying like a baby. And her lying there with her pretty blue eyes staring out of her head and her pretty mouth all twisted. The red marks there on her throat. The marks of these two very ends where I'd strangle the life out of her.
You weren't unlucky. You were stupid. You killed her without planning it. Well, and what did you do with the body?
Cemented her into the wall of the cellar. And the bloke next door had a gas heater. Exploded and blew out the old ruddy wall between us, it did. By the time I got home, there was farming and bobbies all over the place. And there was Agnes, what was left of her, lying right out in the middle of the cellar floor for all the world to see.
A truly intelligent man foresees every possibility and guards against it.
Who could? Who could foresee a thing like that?
I could.
You could?
I stand before you as the living proof of it. In 10 or 15 years, I shall be free because I'm intelligent. Whereas you will rot and die here because you are stupid.
Oh, pretty clever, ain't you? Know just about everything there is to know, don't you?
No, no, not everything. But quite a lot of things. For instance, I know something about that cough of yours.
What about it?
The color of your skin, the look about your eyes, the way you breathe.
I hope you're not afraid to die, Waters.
Ravage, what are you talking about?
Have you ever heard of retribution, Waters?
What?
Oh, the inevitable fate that pursues, at last destroys the criminal mind. A vengeance, you might call it.
What? You don't think anything's going to happen to you or me, do you?
And not to me, Waters. For the intelligent man foresees and prevents even that. But to you, Waters, most certainly to you.
Oh, indeed. And who's going to do all of this?
He is known by various names, Waters, but best known as the Angel of Death. Retribution, the Angel of Death. Absurd, was it not? But a most purposeful absurdity. For the intellectual stimulus so necessary to remaining mentally alert during the prison years ahead was here delivered into my hands. An experiment. And one almost impossible under any other condition. And William Waters would be my guinea pig. An experiment to determine just how far a man might succeed through sheer superiority of intelligence in breaking down and destroying the mind and the body of another. By the simple power of suggestion. I suggested nothing directly. Merely a word here, a glance there. Drops of water wearing away the stone.
I got a fever again tonight. Haven't I, John?
No, no. A touch, perhaps, but that is all.
The head feels up. It's that blasted cough, what does it?
No, you mustn't worry about it. It's very bad for people with your condition to worry.
What condition? What condition, John?
Why, nothing. People with a cough like yours, people who feel, indisposed, that's all.
Oh. What's that book you're reading, Nathan?
Just a book. A scientific book that I got from the prison library.
What sort of a scientific book?
Oh, a general book on medicine. Things like that, you know.
Let me see it.
Oh, no. You wouldn't understand.
Here, give it here.
No, please. Give it back to me. You wouldn't be interested.
Oh. You had it open at this place here, didn't you? This is what you've been reading, ain't it?
Well, yes. Among other things.
Tuberculosis. Is that what I got, John?
Tuberculosis? Oh, don't be silly. There's nothing seriously wrong with you.
John, you've got to tell me. I don't want to die.
No, you're not going to die. You take care of yourself.
Why should it come to me? I've always been healthy. I'm not old yet.
Of course you are not. You're just imagining things.
Imagining things?
You're worrying too much, that's all.
So what makes you think I'm worrying?
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes when you're asleep, tell me, do you ever have dreams?
What sort of dreams?
Oh, well, about the past or...
Oh, you mean about her?
Yes. Do you ever dream you see her lying there on the floor with her eyes bulging out of her head and her mouth all twisted and her tongue all black and swollen?
John, don't stop it!
And your fingers digging into her throat?
Stop it! Stop it!
What's the matter here?
Oh, he seems somewhat disturbed in his mind this evening, Guard.
Oh, his mind, eh? Oh, that reminds me. Doctor said we were to try to prevail on him to get out of his bunk tomorrow and get outside, get a little exercise and fresh air.
Oh?
You tell him, eh?
All right, yes. I will.
What were you two muttering about?
Oh, he was just telling me what the doctor said about you.
What?
Oh, he wants you to stay in your bunk and get plenty of rest. Near, I knew. The time for what I had planned as the culmination of my experiment. Waters was having periods of definite delirium. But I waited. I waited for them to become more pronounced. Then, one night, when I listened to him tossing and muttering for hours in his bunk, I crossed over in the darkness.
Oh, no. Wait. It ain't time yet. I don't have to go. No.
William Waters,
I've come for you, William Waters.
What?
She sent me, William. She sent me with her eyes staring out of her head. The black, swollen tongue.
No. No.
I'm the angel of death.
Oh, I'll kill her. I'll kill her.
Take your hands from my throat. Take your hands
of death. I'll kill you.
Why? Stop.
Let me quiet you. What's going on here? I had to hit him. The man is out of his mind. He thinks I'm some angel of death or something.
Yeah, you. Come on. Up, please. Come on there, Walter.
Nah. What's the matter with you?
Buster. You. Is you what done this to me?
Oh, I told you he was out of his mind.
Is you what done it to me? I'll see it now.
Come on now. You're coming with me.
I'll kill you, fool, son.
Come on.
I'll get out of your house in this moment. Leave me 600 years.
Come on.
I'll kill you.
It was interesting while it lasted, and I've always believed that given a little more time, I could have ended my experiment successfully. But I'd other plans to make now. Plans for the day when I would be free. And at last it came. At last I was walking away from the prison gate, a free man. And now began my search. It was not difficult. It led me at last to Paris, to a small apartment, where I went tonight, December 31st, New Year's Eve.
Yes?
Good evening.
Well, good evening, sir. Did you wish to see someone?
Oh, you don't recognize me?
Why, I do, of course, but, are you a friend of Pam's?
I'm indeed.
Who is it, darling?
It's a friend of yours, dear.
A friend of both of you.
John.
What?
Yes, in fact, your husband, my dear, and Raymond's best friend.
John, it's been...
15 years, yes. You only returned to Paris recently, did you not?
Yes, a short time ago.
And you never knew that I was convicted and sentenced to prison for your double murder, did you?
Murder?
Oh, that was quite as I planned it. I knew where you were, but the authorities did not.
John.
But perhaps you have heard of a curious legal technicality which provides that a man cannot be convicted twice for the same crime. You see, I've already paid for your murders. And now I've come to collect an ancient debt.
Put down that gun.
I then walked calmly from their rooms. I made no effort to hide my face, my trail, or my identity. I can now defy every element in life and in law. After 15 years, I've committed the crimes for which I've already paid my debt to society. I shall mail this letter to the police, who may give it to the newspapers, or whoever wants it. Although it is now a matter of indifference to me if the world remarks upon my cleverness or my patience. For my life is complete. No man has ever known such happiness. John Forsyth.
Yes, come in, Madame Leclerc.
I have the letter now that I wished you to mail for me.
I've come to you, John Forsyth.
Waters.
I'm not Waters any longer.
How did you get out?
They said I was insane. So I hadn't been responsible when I killed her. Then they said I was cured. Sane again. And then they let me out. But there was one thing they never knew. They never knew who I really was.
What are you talking about?
That's why I've come to you, John Forsyth. I am the chosen messenger of an higher power.
Look here, Waters.
Die, John Forsyth.
Ah!
The story ends with a newspaper clipping. Let me read it to you. Paris, January 1st. This gay metropolis spent one of its quietest New Year's Eves in recent years. In all greater Paris, there were only two recorded deaths by violence, both of which, by a strange coincidence, occurred within a few yards of each other. The first was the fatal shooting by an unknown assailant of an Englishman, John Forsyth. The second victim, unidentified, had apparently leaped from a window or roof of the same dwelling occupied by Forsyth. Police were at a loss to explain a weird black silk robe and cape worn by the man. Jean-Vive Leclerc, concierge of the building, alleges to have heard a voice repeating an English phrase, "I am the angel of death," just before the suicidal leap. However, this can hardly have any bearing on the case, since the said phrase was undoubtedly uttered by New Year's revelers in the neighborhood.
Do you have no direction?
Are you trying to make sense of this absurd existence that we experience on a daily basis?
Do you wish to find meaning in this existential quagmire that is the daily grind?
Well, come on down to CITR for Volunteer Wednesdays from 11 to 1 p.m. every week and find your meaning in life. No experience is necessary, so what are you waiting for, Sisyphus? Life is knocking.
Hello, it's Siri. I, for one, would just like to say goodbye to 2016 for being f***ing garbage. Everything about it was a waste.
You know what, Siri? I'm not sure you're really right about that. I think 2016 was a great year for music.
Who are you? You are wrong. It was all trash.
Who am I? I'm Andy Resto. I'm the host of The Burrow. I'm the music director here at CITR.
I do not believe that there was good music in 2016. I am going to delete this entire year from my system's database.
Hold on, Siri. I'm sure I can convince you that 2016 had plenty to offer. I've got 4 hours of magical music to prove it.
Okay, NDE, you can try, but I am pretty f***ing depressed about 2016 and I don't think you can convince me.
Tune in to CATR 101.9 FM on New Year's Eve through midnight. Andy and Siri will be dishing up 4 hours of the best that 2016 had to offer, and you don't want to miss it.
It could be global, trance, spoken word, rock, the usual and the weird, or it could be something different. Oral Tentacles, Thursdays 12 to 6 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
And you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and that is all the time that we have for Scald's Hall. And coming up in a moment, we have Canada Post Rock with John, another live human being from us here at CITR. So, from all of us here, please have a safe and happy weekend. Have a safe and happy New Year.